Hey, I'm Michaela LaFrac, the host of Vermont Edition. The podcast you're about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity. Happy listening. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Michaela LaFrac. When you have somewhere to go, do you ever take public transit? If you're in Vermont, there's a good chance that there is not a bus service nearby. In Chittenden County, Green Mountain Transit runs the bus system, but it's facing a severe budget shortfall, and it could have to cut service. It also just brought back fares after being free to ride for about the last 3 years. What would it take to have a robust public transit system in Chittenden County? That question was recently posed to Brave Little State, Vermont Public's listener-powered journalism show. They answer your questions about Vermont, our region, and its people. Brave Little State's Sabine Pooks took on the question, and we're going to play that episode that she put together for you today. After the episode, we'll have a live discussion about transit planning in Chittenden County. As you listen, email us with your thoughts or your questions about public transit in your region to vermontedition@vermontpublic.org. We'll have a transportation planner on hand to help answer them. But first, let's listen together to Brave Little State.
About 6 months ago, I got rid of my car. I'm older. I'm 84, you know, and driving wasn't so much fun for me anymore. In addition, I had so much rust on my car, I couldn't afford to fix it. So I'm without a car, and I'm learning how to get around.
You see people that are on their way to work every morning, or they're going to their friend's house, or they're just on the bus to be social and get out for the day, or they're running errands, you know. I definitely know, like, a few people that I probably don't know their name, but I've seen them on the bus almost every day this year, and it's just, it's really nice to see these people and feel a part of a community.
It's very convenient, so I enjoy the bus that we
have. Depending on who's driving.
Yeah, right. Depends on who's driving.
Did you two meet on the bus?
We met at the bus station.
Yeah. Became best friends.
Yeah. Well, I asked her for a cigarette, and we were talking about being sober and, you know, walking our sobriety path, and we decided that we would be best friends.
Yeah.
And hold each other accountable and, you know, just be each other's people. She's my person.
You are my person.
Yeah.
From Vermont Public, this is Brave Little State. I'm Sabine Pooks. Riding the bus around Chittenden County, you witness some bus magic. Newly minted best friends. A couple on their way to officially move in together for the first time.
I can't believe I met you guys as you're about to move in together.
I know. What are the odds of that happening again?
Public transit can be a place where people connect with each other, outside the isolated shells of their cars. And at the heart of the public transit system in Chittenden County is a fleet of big blue and green buses. The system, Green Mountain Transit, has 11 different local routes that run around the county, plus commuter and link buses to places like Montpelier and St. Albans. We heard from people who live near the local bus routes that the system can be incredibly convenient for them. For the last 4 years since the start of the pandemic, it was completely free, though that changed just a few weeks ago, on May 20th. And choosing public transit over a car is also better for the environment. But the bus system we have is fragile. Fewer people are riding the buses today than a decade ago, and Green Mountain Transit is staring down a big fiscal cliff. Unless it can find $2 million by November, GMT says it will have to make major service cuts next year. That means less service for the people who need it, and it means it will be harder to attract riders who are used to taking their car. Like Nathaniel Eisen, this episode's winning question asker. By the way, bus magic, that's his phrase. Nathaniel lives in Winooski, and he's what transit researchers call a choice rider. He also has a car, so he's much more likely to take transit if it's convenient. And on his way to our interview at the Vermont Public Studio in Colchester, it wasn't.
By the time I had the thought, oh, I wonder if I could take a bus to Vermont Public, by the time I would have gotten there, I would have missed the bus that would have gotten me here on time for our interview. And then the next one wasn't for another 20 minutes. And so I drove here and I caught up to that bus and I was like behind it. And that just happens to me all the time.
That 20-minute window between buses he's talking about, it's called a headway. Most local GMT buses have weekday headways ranging from 20 to 30 minutes, though some are much longer, depending on the day and the route. Nathaniel wants to know, what if buses had shorter headways or dedicated bus lanes? What if we reintroduced a streetcar system in Burlington? He did some research and realized these are all options we've considered before.
That's probably very validating that you're not the only one who's thought this.
It was totally validating.
In the early 1990s, the state of Vermont looked into building a new transit system for Chittenden County, either a better and more efficient bus system or what's called light rail, an above-ground train system. The state found that all of those options would attract more riders than the current bus network over time. And yet, it's 2024 and we don't have low headways. We don't have light rail either.
And so for me, this question is in part a question of why weren't any of these options pursued?
Reading these reports, Nathaniel is haunted by the possibility of what could have been. And that's why he wants to know.
Why doesn't Chittenden County have better public transit options?
Welcome to Brave Little State, Vermont Public's listener-powered journalism show. Each episode starts with a question about Vermont that's been asked and voted on by you, our audience. Today, listener Nathaniel Eisen and I are boarding the bus to understand the state of public transit in Vermont's most populous county.
There's a lot of people that don't have cars, too, so this is like our lifeline.
We look back at some unrealized transit dreams.
Part of me says, you know, what were we thinking?
And hear from the people who are fighting just to keep the system we do have alive.
And it will sort of create a death cycle where we just end up in perpetual cuts.
We're a proud member of the NPR network. Welcome.
I used to have a truck and then I crashed into a telephone pole.
So now the bus is your main way of getting your
Yeah.
Bus? Yeah, until I got a truck again.
How long have you two been together?
December 1st. We've been friends for years.
How did you meet?
Special Olympics through Howard Center.
She did,
I did soccer.
She did soccer. I did softball.
Yeah.
What do you like about competing in the Olympics?
Bragging rights. About winning and losing, saying, ha ha, you lost, ha ha, we win.
Yeah.
You don't have the gold medal, we have the gold medal. And when I play games, I have a serious look on my face. Like, you don't want to mess with me at that point.
And is that the face that you fell in love with?
Yes.
Chittenden County is more than Burlington and its surrounding towns. But in terms of public transit history and future, that's where the big ideas have been centered and where we'll keep our focus for this episode. By the way, if you're interested in transit infrastructure and behavior in other parts of Vermont, we have a Brave Little State episode about that. You can go check it out. It's called How Can Vermonters Drive Less from 2019. The first modern public transit system in the Burlington area was a streetcar system. It was extensive, snaking from what's now South Burlington up North Avenue to the west and to Winooski to the east. Then came the automobile and all the excitement that came with the automobile. In 1929, Burlington scrapped its streetcars altogether, famously burning the last one in the street, and switched to buses under a private operator. In the 70s, when the local bus company went out of business, the state created a public entity to oversee that system instead. But by the 1990s, there were still a lot of people using their cars to get around, and officials complained about congestion on the roads.
That's despite some pretty inventive efforts to get more people to ride the bus. Like this 1992 rap from students with the mayor's youth office.
Instead of 20 cars making smoking dust, those 20 people are riding the bus.
Anyway, in 1992, the state was looking for a more attractive transit option, and it commissioned a study into building a fixed-route light rail system around Burlington. Think above-ground subways crossing the city. Here's a colleague reading from the report.
These systems can not only increase transit patronage, because people are much more willing to ride rail vehicles than buses, but can also direct growth to downtown areas, cluster...
The light rail system could run twice as fast as the existing buses, and would start with a line from downtown Burlington to the airport. The price tag?
$50 million.
4 years later, the state came out with another report. It was 700 pages.
The recommended action plan for transit improvements is in four phases, with two sub-elements of phase three.
The first step outlined was to improve bus frequency or headways for the current system, down to 10 minutes. And eventually, Burlington, South Burlington, and Winooski would have an entirely new light rail or bus rapid transit system with its own rights of way for quick navigating through traffic. On paper, this was a time of real hope and excitement for public transit advocates. So the 1996 report comes out. Right. And then what? What happened after that? Can you sort of walk me through where you went from there?
You know, frankly, not much happened.
Peter Clavel was mayor of Burlington for a large chunk of the 90s and was on the 1996 Project Steering Committee. We spoke to him back in January for another episode of Brave Little State. Peter doesn't remember one decision that the committee made to ditch the project, or one naysayer who dramatically shot the whole thing down at a meeting. Instead,
it just died a slow, quiet death. You know, again, I think the challenges were just too overwhelming to address. And nor do I know that there was ever a consensus on the best approach. Mm.
Did you feel at that time like it was incumbent on your office in any way to push that first phase forward or move forward with some of the recommendations from the report?
Yeah, and again, this was... Maybe one of the problems was there are a lot of people involved, a lot of organizations and institutions, and when everybody's in charge, nobody's in charge.
Despite the length and great amount of technical detail in the study, it didn't have a specific action plan for moving forward, like whether to pursue light rail or bus rapid transit. It also didn't recommend a specific source of funding. Most funding for public transit comes from the federal government. Peter says the federal representatives who were part of the study process, they didn't seem to think it was possible for Burlington to get the money it needed.
You know, frankly, looking back at it in the 1996 study, part of me says, you know, what were we thinking? Do we really think that at that time that we might be able to generate a $50 million public investment? Was that real or was it just dreaming? We might have been naive, but I think there was a notion that public transportation is so important that we're going to do this, we're going to do it right. But those of us that believed that this was important, I think, failed in convincing others, including regular citizens, that this was important.
Burlington didn't entirely abandon its railway dreams. In 2000, the state and federal government reportedly spent almost $20 million on a rail line that extended from Burlington down to Charlotte, 13 miles away. The commuter rail was dubbed the Champlain Flyer, and supporters hoped it would usher in a passenger rail renaissance in Vermont. But critics called it a boondoggle. And not long after he entered office, Governor Jim Douglas pulled the plug on the project, blaming low ridership and other funding priorities like maintaining roads and bridges. Just 2 years after its inaugural ride, the Flyer took its last ever trip in 2003.
I'm not a car person. I'll just tell you that right off. It's not that I can't be. It's that I choose not to be. I like public transportation. I think it's good for the environment. It's sustainable. I think we should all, you know, try to go car free and take the bus more or a train more.
Do you have a lot of the bus routes memorized?
Yeah.
That's kind of a superpower.
In a sense.
What advice do you have for people who are considering going car free or using their car less, but maybe are daunted by that possibility?
Take a chance, try it. Get to know the schedules, first of all. I would study the schedules and give it a try and see what you think. You know, it can be good. You have no hassle of the car and it gets you out there, seeing the city, experiencing relationships with others. So there's a lot of benefits to it.
Burlington's flirtation with local commuter rail was a bust. We're not getting streetcars back anytime soon either. That leaves us with the bus system we have in place now. And it's struggling.
So over the 2 years, I think it's very realistic that we'll see about almost a one-third reduction in service.
Clayton Clark is general manager of Green Mountain Transit, which runs the buses in Chittenden County. GMT faced funding woes before the pandemic, in part due to low ridership, but thanks to a big boost in COVID stimulus funding from the federal government, it could put off making major reductions in service. Clayton says that's no longer the case.
And that's going to really require GMT to make a lot of really hard and horrible decisions because public transit access is critical for people's lives.
GMT is facing a big gap in operating funds, both in federal dollars and the required local and state match. Over and over, agencies in Vermont have studied different ways to make up that match, including in 3 different studies over the last decade. But lawmakers haven't taken action on making a longer-term plan. Once again, those big studies aren't worth much without political will and money.
Right now, whenever we find ourselves in a financial hole, there's really just one place to go to, and that's the state legislature. And it's clear that that's a pattern that they're tired of.
In the absence of another boost from the state, Clayton says GMT's planning on creating an affiliated nonprofit this summer so it can raise funds for the bus system. And he says it's going to look at making those service cuts as early as July 2025.
It really worries me that by reducing service, we'll actually reduce ridership to the point that we'll have to reduce service more, and it will sort of create a death cycle where we just end up in perpetual cuts.
Another hit to ridership? Since the pandemic, GMT has kept fares free. However, just recently on May 20th, GMT brought back fares for its urban buses at $2 a ride, with the potential for further fare raises down the line. The state estimates that the new fares could reduce ridership by about 15%. There are a lot of riders that GMT might never lose. Almost all of the passengers we spoke with for this story don't have cars and need the bus to get around. They said sometimes the buses run behind schedule, and sometimes they're a little worried about their safety. But for the most part, they find the system convenient and reliable. Like 52-year-old Leo Pesci, who lives at the Motel 6 in Winooski. He usually uses the Special Services Transit Agency, or SSTA, to get to the methadone clinic and errands. SSTA is a door-to-door transit service that GMT contracts out for eligible riders with disabilities. But today, Leo forgot to set up an appointment, so he's taking the bus.
It's just been a long time. Like, this is a large chunk of my day. But it's all right. I'm glad that it exists. I mean, it does its function, you know. It works really well.
But what about so-called choice riders, the ones who could just as easily hop in their cars? How does the system win them over?
When we left off, reporter Sabine Pooks was wondering how the transit system could win over people who have the option of taking a car instead. They're known as choice riders.
I went out to play disc golf, and now I'm going back home. So it's practical. You know, I can get to activity, you know. And I went early in the morning so I could beat everybody, you know. So I could just do my own thing. I had cancer for 25 months, and I mean, radiation treatment was literally me walking one block, even in the worst days, get on the bus, drop me off here, get on the bus, drop me off back at home. So my whole cancer treatment was like, the bus was great, you know, I didn't have to worry about getting up here for nothing. So yeah, so the bus has a lot, has played a good role in my life.
That stop that we just stopped at, that was a big stop for you for a while.
Yeah. And you know what, for a while, it gave me a lot of anxiety afterwards. I was like, ooh, I hate this bus stop, but to get to Essex, I gotta go through there, you know? So, yeah, it's a big bus stop, you're right. Yeah.
In the process of reporting this story, I realized I very much fall into the category of choice rider. I drive or bike most places, but it turns out the bus is actually super convenient for me. The number two drives right by my house and stops just a block away from my office. Not everyone has that luxury. We asked Vermonters on Reddit and Instagram why they don't take the bus. A lot of you said there aren't convenient routes that take you from your homes to your offices or into town. One commenter from Burlington's New North End said their commute's 20 minutes in the car, but an hour on the bus because of all the transfers. And lots of people mentioned headways. If I miss a bus, I'm stuck somewhere for another hour, said one commenter. In other words, policymakers and officials will have to close that gap in convenience, even as the bus system makes major cuts, if they want to see more people choosing to ride. Part of that is bringing more people to the bus. As those Burlington high schoolers said,
see you at the bus station.
Okay, let's leave that in the 90s. These days, the Burlington Office of City Planning is looking for ways to build more housing along public transit routes. Remember, buses are convenient for people like me when they live on or near those routes. The city is also going neighborhood by neighborhood for yet another study into how it could get people to use transit systems in their areas, beginning with the Old North End. City planners are visiting shift workers to talk to them about getting to and from work after hours, and they're considering building new infrastructure, like a mobility hub, a space where people can access buses and car shares and bikes all in one place. In the meantime, local advocates are taking matters into their own hands. A group called Vermonters for People-Oriented Places recently installed wooden benches at bus stops around town where there were none, to make a point about how simple transit infrastructure can really be.
Can you go to the next slide here? Actually, all right, so go back. Just one more thing about the transit app.
All these efforts to get more people out of their cars and onto the bus. Already, there are groups of people making this transition together. A dozen people are seated at the Brownell Library in Essex Junction on a Saturday morning. Volunteer Joel Collada is fielding questions about riding the bus. It's part of a new GMT-sponsored training for people who want to learn how to ride the bus. And between the new fare cards and the GMT schedule app, there's a lot to take in.
If you haven't ridden a bus before, even if you're in a new city, the intricacies and the differences between systems and modes of travel can be intimidating. And I've even heard that it dissuades some people from riding the bus just because they don't know. And it can be embarrassing to make a mistake in public. So it's important.
Joel is a passionate user of public transit. Like me, he conveniently lives right off the number two line. And that's the bus we're riding today, to put what we've learned during the presentation into practice. At the bus stop, I wait next to Dorothy Bergendahl of Essex Junction.
I wanted to learn how I could use the bus to get downtown without taking my car.
Why don't you want to take your car?
Parking. The cost, the how to pay for it, and where to find it.
She's hoping the training will demystify her questions about the bus schedule, but today introduces some new questions.
And so 11:40, there's supposed to be one at 11:40.
Because the bus doesn't come when the app says it's going to.
I hate to say it, but this is not atypical.
At first we think we've read the schedule wrong, but it turns out the bus is just a bit late.
Yeah, this is wrong.
You just have to be ready for more unexpected occasions when you take transit.
Faith Ingles Rude is another volunteer and frequent bus user.
Once you've done it and you understand the system and know how it works for you and have times that work for you, then it's not a big deal. Then it's just as convenient to take the bus. But I think that gap of having to learn all the systems is the hardest thing.
At the end of the day, though, it's about more than just learning to board the bus and pay the fare. Riders also need to learn to be flexible and patient, because we need the system to work better for us. But in the meantime, we might just have to work with the system we've got.
Just because we have glitches like that, you know? But, you know, where else do you get to meet all these different kinds of people?
This story comes to us from Brave Little State. Thanks to Nathaniel Eisen for that great question. For more on Green Mountain Transit's new fare system and how to navigate it, head to ridegmt.com. Here to discuss with us is Marshall Distel. He's a senior transportation planner with the Chittenden County Regional Planning Commission. He joined the CCRPC in 2015. He works on the development of transportation projects and studies related to roadways, bridges, intersections, and bike and pedestrian facilities. Marshall, welcome.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, we're glad to have you with us. So, Marshall, first, what were your thoughts listening to that episode? What were your takeaways?
Yeah, my initial reaction is, you know, very well put together, very well researched episode, provided some good insight from local transit users, also, you know, conveyed some of the challenges that we face. I will say it is a little disheartening, though. We once had these really significant visionary transit plans for our region, but now, you know, we're sort of struggling to just essentially maintain what we have.
Mm. And Marshall, that's part of your job to help figure out how to do it a little bit better. Tell us more about what it means to be a transportation planner in Chittenden County. What exactly do you do?
Yeah, exactly. So transportation planners do a variety of things. I manage local and regional transportation studies related to roadways, intersections, park and rides, bike and pedestrian facilities. I also work in direct coordination with Green Mountain Transit on public transit planning efforts. So we do a lot of different things related to transportation and sustainable development and economic growth, and really just trying to promote the development of a multimodal system that is safe, efficient, and reliable. So we do a lot of things here.
Do you take public transit?
I do. Infrequently, I will say. As we know, it's fairly limited. But I think it's important to kind of take a step back and just set the scene and acknowledge that public transportation in the U.S. as a whole is not known for being too great, especially when, you know, you compare us to many other developed countries. And this sort of has come as a result of many decades of car-oriented planning and just a lack of investment in public transit systems. And while, you know, transit does work fairly well in some of our larger metros and in rural and suburban regions, it can be, you know, infrequent. The service is not provided all day. It's can be unreliable, just essentially is far less convenient than driving for most people. So, you know, in our region, it's not really surprising that the vast majority of us get around by driving alone. And there are there's plenty of reasons why this isn't ideal. You know, first off, it's an equity issue, means that car ownership is really a requirement for folks, and that's expensive. It's the second biggest household expense for Americans. And then, you know, all that driving, it just consumes a significant amount of energy and makes transportation the single biggest way that we emit greenhouse gases. And, you know, since most of us don't rely on public transit, improving service is rarely a top political priority, which then makes things even more challenging for the people who do rely on that service.
Let's start with the phones with Bob in Rutland. Bob, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you. Unfortunately, in listening to your conversation earlier with some folks, when you start thinking of yourself, you know, as far as convenience, that's a me thing, thinking it's inconvenient for me. It's just my convenience. Rather than thinking how public transportation is supposed to be, saving energy, helping the community, et cetera, like that.
Yeah, thank you. That's an interesting thought, Bob. It seems like Bob here, Marshall, is pointing to the fact that while taking public transit might not always be the most convenient option, it's in some ways the right way to do if you are able to do it, if you have the time and the capacity.
Exactly. You know, I totally agree, Bob. You know, to get more people to take transit, we do need to make it more convenient, more accessible. Right now, people drive because it's the most convenient option. You know, those coverage gaps, the service frequency, reliability issues, those are, you know, just some of the factors that discourage folks from using transit. But, you know, one other thing important to note, though, is that, you know, we can advocate for transit and alternatives all we want. But if our communities continue to grow with sort of a low density pattern of development, we're not going to be able to effectively achieve our transit goals.
Well, I think we have some calls coming in on just that topic. First, let's go to Andrea in Burlington. Andrea, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you so much. This is one of my favorite topics, so I'm so glad that you're having this call, this conversation today. I live in Burlington. I was without a car for 7 years, used the bus often. I have a car now, but I still continue to bike in Burlington. And I see the ineffectiveness of the system. But what I really wanted to point out, which is thing in the piece that we listened to, and I think is really relevant to this conversation, is that in Burlington, there's a bike walk plan BTV that was really made by the city over 10 years ago and included a goal of ridership increase on the bus by 10%. And that's never been addressed. Under Moreau, it was completely ignored. The Department of Public Works really has ignored that goal as it's developed over his 12-year administration. None of that has happened. And so I'm so excited that there's a new mayor that hopefully will be working towards these goals. But I think that idea of even the system of the city of Burlington needing to support GMT and support that goal is absent. And so as a result, it hasn't seen any kind of improvements. I also want to point out that GMT, also missing from that piece, is that GMT is made up of representatives from all over the state and is missing. So it's like difficult for a decision to be made about Burlington transportation when it's something that's being decided upon by some people from Franklin County, Washington County, all over the state are making decisions about Burlington. So I think there's a lot of infrastructure challenges that we're looking at. And I think what we really need is vision and people to be creative and think about how we can actually. It's so disappointing to hear Clavel in that piece talk about how there just wasn't the appetite for
right.
this. And I think that really needs to be changed and that there is an appetite for this to happen. And I'm hopeful that that could be part of the discussion in your piece today.
Andrea, I'm going to jump in here. Thank you so much for bringing up those points. I want to make sure our guests can maybe address the first thing you brought up about the bike walk plan. It's not something I'm familiar with. Marshall, is this something you've worked on with the Chittenden County Regional Planning Commission?
Yes, it sounds vaguely familiar. We do a lot of these sort of plans, and it's certainly frustrating when we have these plans and it has a great vision and then it just kind of sits on the shelf. I think we need, you know, more advocacy around, you know, why transit is important, why we need to invest in these for our communities. You know, the lack of transportation really is a major obstacle to just the full participation in society. There's a significant segment of our population that is too young, too old, or even, you know, too financially strained to be able to own and operate a car. So from an equity standpoint, you know, providing alternatives to the car is pretty critical. And, you know, as a transportation planner, I try to stress the importance of ensuring that everyone has a variety of mobility options to, you know, move throughout their community. When you don't have transportation, everything else just becomes a domino effect, and you may end up not being able to get to work, unable to connect with family and friends, access doctor's appointments, you know, just sustain a healthy life and so on. Mm. So it's super just important to convey those facts.
When you and some of our callers have brought up this need for additional public investment in public transportation, where exactly could that funding come from, though? I mean, we just ended a legislative session where we saw many, many demands on the state's coffers and major concerns about increases in various taxes. Can that money come from somewhere else, come from the federal government? How do we make this work?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, you know, transit funding obviously is a piece of the puzzle that we certainly need to address. You know, as the pandemic money has been running out, you know, transit systems all around the country are starting to enter sort of this fiscal crisis that was touched upon in the Brave Little State piece. And that, you know, that crisis is a vicious cycle. As it stands now, most of the federal dollars that go to transit services, they seem to largely be limited to capital cost, which essentially means buying buses. But, you know, the operating costs are really where transit funds are strained. And again, this is not a Vermont specific issue. Just the current subsidies simply aren't enough to cover the cost of transit around the country. And these, you know, these financial deficits end up leading to more deteriorating services, meaning transit hours are cut, they become more limited, ridership starts to dwindle, and then just, you know, continues to make folks not want to ride transit. So what do we do about that locally? That's, again, a tough question. In Vermont, you know, these transit funding challenges have been evaluated and studied many, many times over the past 25 years. These studies have identified numerous potential alternative revenue sources for transit in Vermont, sort of to move away from the current system that is very dependent on local property taxes. The latest funding report that was presented to the Vermont House and Senate Transportation Committees in January, that identified a number of other options to increase revenue for transit. That being said, there's no silver bullets here with the alternative revenue options, but, you know, ultimately, it's going to be up to the legislature to decide how to move forward.
Hmm. Well, let's bring in some voices of folks who do use public transit and rely on it. Keely writes, I've been taking the commuter bus from Bristol to Burlington to get to work for the last 13 years. It's been an eye-opener, and I've made so many new friends who I cherish deeply. I've met people from Ukraine and from Turkey on the bus, to name just a few countries, and they marvel at how nice the commute is here in Vermont. Anna in Burlington also takes the bus. Anna's on the line with us now. Anna, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that I really resonated with some of the comments that were said earlier about kind of the long commutes, and I took an hour-long bus ride from Richmond to Burlington most days of the week.
Anna, I'm so sorry. We're having a bit of trouble hearing you. I do see in the notes here that you take the bus to Milton and really enjoy that ride. I'm hoping perhaps you can send us an email to vermontedition@vermontpublic.org if you have other comments to add. Let's go next to, I believe it's Sean in Colchester. Sean, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, hello. My question was, if the transit system is in such dire financial straits, why did they do away with the ridership fares the last
couple of years.
Mm. Yeah, thank you for that question. And Marshall, as I understand it, a number of other transit systems in other parts of the country also did away with their fares during the pandemic and afterwards, as Green Mountain Transit did in Chittenden County. You don't work for Green Mountain Transit, so I don't expect you to answer for them. But do you have a sense of why that decision was made?
Yeah, so one of the big reasons why fares were eliminated in the first place was just to remove that, you know, we were in the middle of the COVID pandemic. So it was just to remove that sort of driver-rider interactions, keep folks away from each other as best as we can, and to do that social distancing.
And then afterwards, I mean, a number of these systems, including in Chittenden County, received federal funding, right? Like pandemic aid funding?
Yes, exactly. And that funding really helped extend the fare-free service, which unfortunately has gone away at this point due to a lack of funding.
Yes. Yes. Just recently, Green Mountain Transit started charging again for bus rides. Let's go back to the phones. We have George on the line from Johnson. George, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey. Like I said, my name is George. I live in Johnson, and then I work at EVM Medical Center. There's only two buses that go to Johnson, well, to Jeffersonville. And the problem is, if I missed the last bus, I'd have to get my wife to drive all the way from Johnson to come pick me up. So that is one of the obstacles that kind of hold me back from taking the bus, you know, on a daily basis, which I'd love to, because I really do enjoy just taking it to relax and reading my book before getting to work.
Mm. Well, yeah, thank you, George. I think we heard from folks in that Brave Little State episode with similar concerns about if they miss one bus, they have to wait a long period of time to catch the next one. Sometimes that can make them late for work or an appointment. Thank you for sharing. We have John in Waterford on the line. John, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking the call. Yes, I would want to suggest that you have more of a citizen GMT rider app that puts together drivers in their personal vehicles, vetted by GMT with proper insurance, registration, and driver's license, and GMT becoming the clearinghouse for people, you know, post the drives that they're going to make. I just drove from St. Johnsbury to Burlington and back, and one guy in the car. But if I could have posted that ride, you know, I'm sure there would be other people that would say, hey, I'll take that ride. And the GMT acts as the clearinghouse. Payment is made through the app. I get paid as the driver. And the riders get a much, a better experience. And GMT doesn't have to have the big infrastructure, buying buses, et cetera, et cetera. But I think it would solve the problem in a state like Vermont, where, you know, it's a smaller state, so you could pilot something like this. I think it would be the solution. And today, with apps being so readily available to people, everybody's on their phone, this is not something that would be difficult to implement.
John, I love this. I love this innovative idea you've got. I'm curious if our guest, Marshall Distel, senior transportation planner, has heard of anything like this, a rideshare app that is managed by a local transit authority.
That's a great question. You know, I know GMT kind of manages that volunteer driver program and sort of works to connect volunteers with folks who need rides. Other than that, I'm not. It's a great suggestion, but I'm not sure how we should move forward with that. I think it's something we should talk to GMT about.
Well, your planning commission that you work for received a grant from the federal government to study what does need to happen to make our communities transit ready. Where are you in that process of evaluation?
Sure. Yeah. So we received a big grant for some transit-oriented development planning. And just briefly, you know, to address sort of a past dominated by vehicle planning, more communities around the country are aiming to put residents in mixed-use neighborhoods that, you know, sort of center around a transit hub with buildings that contain not just residential units, but businesses, office space, retail, you name it. So this is called transit-oriented development. And, you know, the people who live in these types of places are far less likely than the national average to drive and more likely to take transit, walk and bike, etc. But, you know, it goes without saying that developing these type of neighborhoods is an extremely long-term project, not something that can be done overnight. But we are super excited with this grant we received. $2.1 million RAISE grant stands for Rebuilding American Infrastructure with Sustainability and Equity. We got that grant from the U.S. Department of Transportation, and it really is a multi-year project that essentially will involve developing these transit-oriented development plans for 10 communities across the five-county region. I say that the overall goal and vision for this planning effort would be to support the development of compact and walkable centers in our villages and downtowns, while also providing, you know, new transit connections for rural mobility-challenged Vermonters. I think that land use piece is really critical for transit, and is something that definitely needs to be addressed.
Big topic of conversation in this recent legislative session as well, the potential reforms to Act 250, Vermont's land use law. Well, Marshall, thank you so much for joining us. It has been a real pleasure. I wonder if we could close just very briefly. If you could tell me, if you look 10 years in the future, what do you hope Chittenden County's transit system is like? Maybe one example of a project you would hope to see comes to fruition.
Yeah, in 10 years, you know, again, I think that land use piece is so critical. I would love to see, with the reforms made to Act 250 that loosened the regulatory hurdles for developing in our existing downtowns and areas for planned growth, I'd love to see some more density, some more compact development. And that's really what is needed to sustain a healthy and, you know, competitive transit system for our region.
Marshall Distel is a senior transportation planner with the Chittenden County Regional Planning Commission. Marshall, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me on.